The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, the DraftKings Network. It's all live from Bar Canada here at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin back in the fold, everybody, from his New Year's break. How you doing, man?
How you doing?
Were you banged up?
I was a little bit Sunday night. Yeah, sure was.
You back? You okay?
I'm good. I'm ready to roll.
Shout out to Wyatt Tomchek, who was here yesterday for Guessing Lines.
Great Wyatt Tomchek. Thank you for filling in, as always.
The great Wyatt Tomchek. Great show today. Pete Futak will join us, obviously, to talk college football with us later. Mike Sando, Will Hill, our buddy Will Hill, had Mike Sando, my old friend, on his podcast. Will's podcast is called Shoulda Bet More, which I love the title of. And Mike Sando will be on the show later on. He is a senior NFL writer at The Athletic. He's also a voter for all the NFL awards for the AP, so we will talk to him about that and beyond. And, of course, Drew Dinsick, which is the case each and every Tuesday to talk NFL, week number 18 and the week that was. Now, we must begin, however, with these two national semis yesterday. First of all, Kelly, let me just say my betting day yesterday, which is always in game with college. In the morning, just some bad results with like Tennessee, Wisconsin. I had an in-game under that should have gotten there. Tennessee, Iowa, pardon me. That should have gotten there, but didn't because of like a pick six and a fumble at the one. There was a tie at plus 290 in the third quarter in terms of the score that I wanted and the fumble at the one. So, anyway, didn't go well in the morning. And then I came roaring back at night, one I probably didn't deserve in the first national semi, and then one I think I sussed out well with UW in the second. But this was fantastic yesterday. First, Michigan and Alabama. Michigan ends up winning this 27-20. They get home as two-point favorites. They are headed to the national championship next week in Houston, 6 days from now. First half, I just felt like, you know, Michigan, I think most people did. Michigan was the better team, but a muffed punt set up a Bama touchdown. Add on a missed PAT for Michigan as well, kept the game at 3 points. There was also that great drive where they tied it up at 7, where they had the incredible play by McCarthy, where he caught the lateral and completed a pass. But I thought Michigan was the better football team, but the score was close, and so it allowed for Nick Saban and the Alabama coaching staff to make adjustments at halftime. They did, realizing they could not push the Michigan defensive line at all. The Michigan defensive line was completely dominating them. They went to a short passing game. It opened up everything for Alabama. They eventually go up 17-13 early in the fourth quarter. But at this point, like, because the third quarter was kind of stagnant on both ends, but Alabama goes up 17-13 early fourth quarter. Even a Milroe fumble goes unpunished when James Turner missed a 49-yard field goal. And then you get another 52-yard field goal from Reichert for Bama, his second 50-plus of the game. So Bama's up 7. You know where the whole story begins here now. 20-13 Bama, 4:41 to go. Michigan had done nothing, Kelly. Nothing the entire second half to this point.
Nope.
44 total yards of offense. They go 75 yards on 8 plays out of the blue, including a McCarthy to Corum 25-yard conversion on a 4th-and-2 from their own 33. They also get set back on that with an illegal back block in the back. That was with just over 3 minutes left. It eventually ends up McCarthy to Roman Wilson for 420 apiece with 94 seconds left. The D holds, and then Jake Thaw muffs the punt, regains possession at the 1. Michigan able to force overtime from there, barely. So I don't. First of all, where did that drive come from? And then, my goodness, just surviving the muff. And then in overtime, Corum.
I don't understand how he survived that punt, like the muffing the punt. Like when he picked that back up.
That's exactly what
I
said.
He's gonna get wrecked. That ball's flying loose.
So funny.
Bama's winning this game.
That's exactly what I
said. I mean, how many times do we see that? Like we see that like 90% of the time. It feels like when you muff a punt like that, you go to pick it up, and everybody's watching these guys barreling downfield. Know you're about to get absolutely destroyed. They fumble the ball every time. I was so impressed.
The muff was one thing, but corralling it and then surviving the hit was everything. It was. And Corum then 8-17 on an amazing run where he cut to the left on a bounce move to the left where he got into the end zone. And then the Michigan defense, what Alabama had at what? First and goal at the 9, then fourth and goal at the 3. It's another low snap. They were plagued, Alabama was, by low snaps all night. This one forced Milroe to abort the design play. He trips over his offensive lineman's leg, falls to the ground. Ball game. Michigan out of just death, it looks like. I mean, when Alabama was driving for that field goal that put them up 7, looked like Alabama couldn't be stopped there. Somehow they were. And there it is. The Michigan Wolverines are headed to the national championship, where they will be 4.5-point favorites, or at least are 4.5-point favorites. Installed, Kelly. You got to install a spread before you're able to bet it.
Installed.
Installed as 4.5-point favorites here against UW, because if you thought that game couldn't be topped, oh, my God. This is another one where I thought, again, Michigan, I thought, was the best team, was the by far the better team in the first half of that game against Alabama, but couldn't, was not nearly as far ahead as that I think they should have been based on the muffed punt and what Alabama did with it and the missed PAT.
So I had Alabama money line, kind of felt the same way through that first half, though, right? I was like, Michigan's outplaying these guys, but I was like, I trust in Saban to kind of make some adjustments. Thought they looked better in that second half, and then right at the end, it was caught up.
It was similar to many bowl games in which it was like 3 games in 1 where Michigan sort of dominated, and Alabama dominated, and somehow Michigan from out of nowhere.
What did you think about the final play? What did you think about that play call?
The low snap botched it.
Okay. All right.
It wasn't supposed to be that.
I don't know where that was going. It was what he was going to swing it out to the back.
Correct.
It looked like he did it. I don't want to say abandoned that, but it looks like he didn't even think about going for it after the snapping. Well,
He tripped over his own guy too.
Man, I don't know. I don't know if that was going anywhere anyway. It's like that might was not. Michigan was sending everybody at him all night long. It affected everything.
Yeah, we will never know. But I thought in the same game, the same thing in the second game, where I thought UW, and this was the one where I was like, someone was asking me right before the game, what are you betting in this one? I go, I want to see Penix against Texas for a drive, and we'll know very quickly how this is going to go. And almost immediately, you're like, oh, this is going to go very well for UW. They have been underestimated all season long. Every little hurdle put in front of them, they overcome. So immediately it was just banging UW bets for much of this first half. But again, the same story, a muffed punt for UW. Remember, it was 14-7 in favor of Washington. They were about to field a punt, which would have allowed them to perhaps matriculate and go up even more, but a muffed punt, and Texas capitalized, made it 14-14. They got a late drive at the end of the half. At 21-21 at the half, somehow in a half that I thought UW dominated, they got stopped on a grand total of 2 drives the Huskies did in that half, besides the end of the half kneel down. Only one was a punt. Remember, one was on downs and a bad 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1 play calls. So, and by the way, on the 14-14, when it's 14-14 and UW got it to go up 21-14, they went for it 4th-and-1 at their own 33, and that resulted in a touchdown. You won't hear the anti-analytics crowd talking about that today, I'm sure. But Penix had 255 yards passing in the first half, and it's tied somehow. Then the third quarter starts. First drive, he goes 6 for 6 for 56 and a touchdown. It's 28-21. C.J. Baxter fumbles immediately. First play from scrimmage for Texas. Sets up UW at the Texas 25. They get a field goal. Then a Texas punt, which a lot of people thought down 10 they shouldn't have done. By the way, third quarter stats, it was 157 to 34 total yards in favor of UW, 10-1 in first downs. Another field goal to make it 34-21. Then Texas matriculates. Jaden Blue fumbles. Then the second punt of the game for UW, Texas big drive. Then after that, 10 plays, 72 yards. Remember, they're down 13. Ewers to Adonai Mitchell from one out. Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. It's for a certain portion of the college football viewing audience and viewers and listeners to this program. 34-28. I've been waiting years to say that about him. 34-28 Washington, 7:23 to go. Washington adds another field goal, 37-28. That trades with an Auburn field goal for Texas. 37-31, 1:09 left. Okay. Then Washington does the thing, because Texas has got only 2 timeouts left, right? Instead of just kneeling, they do the Mario Cristobal, let's run it into the line thing and see if we can risk a fumble. And I'm going, like, I'm just, oh my God, I cannot believe what I'm watching. What are you doing? They survive that on the first 2 plays. And then on the third, when Texas has no timeouts remaining, they do it again. And this time, Dylan Johnson, their running back, gets hurt. And so instead of Texas getting the ball back with what would have been 12 seconds left, there was a 15-second discrepancy with the play clock and the game clock, and if you allow for the punt to go up in the air, they would have had the ball with 12 seconds left. Instead, he gets hurt. Dylan Johnson gets hurt. And you got to explain to me the football logic of this rule. If you're trailing and you get hurt, I get it. There's a 10-second runoff, and a team should risk getting penalized for that because you never know. But if you're ahead in this situation, there is no football logic to the fact that then the game clock stops on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's it became a 33-second difference between when Texas got the ball, if there hadn't been an injury, and versus getting the injury. Not to mention then, of course, Washington with the catch interference on the punt that allowed Texas to start at their own 30-yard line with 45 seconds left in the game instead of 12. And you know what happened? UW's like in single coverage. They get it to the Washington 28 with 28 seconds to go, incomplete in the end zone. Then a 16-yard pass to the 12, which withstood replay. And then so you have a first and 10 at the 12, 15 seconds left, strange swing pass for minus 1 yard, 10 seconds to go. Then out of the end zone, no one could have caught it, 5 seconds to go. Then tripped up, Ewers was, and he sort of threw it out of bounds as he's falling, incomplete. They put 1 second back on the clock, incomplete in the end zone. UW headed to the national championship. 4.5-point dogs. You going to underestimate them again?
No.
Everybody in college football going to underestimate them again? You got to play these things out on the field, man. I don't know what it is about them, but good on Penix. Good on UW. Talk about this with Futech later. Got much more to say. Going to do the same thing. Going to wait a drive against Michigan and then see what happens. Coming back with Drew Dinsick next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all from Maracanada, the Barrage, Bar Canada here at the D. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9, so much more than a producer. Banged up on New Year's Eve and back. You're right. You recover quickly, huh?
Yeah.
He's trying to hit his mic.
Three times. Yeah, it was good, man. That was good. Over in a little bit of Drew's area over there in Southern California on Sunday night. Partied there and then drove back here yesterday.
Look at you.
But a little later yesterday than I thought I was going to be hitting the road, but yeah.
Were you on the beach like Drew or not quite the beach?
Close to it, yeah. There was like some storms over there. It was weird this weekend.
You know, it rains in Southern California.
Yeah, but they're all like, there was like storm surge and stuff people were worried about.
Storm surge.
I feel like I was in Florida again with hurricanes.
We get tweets at Beanie the Book. Jay Buckley, speaking of the Giants win totals, we're sweating an all under 5.5 at plus 280. How did the Eagles botch this for me? I know, man. I know. Mike Alvarez. You have a good shot of the Ravens playing week 18 like it's a preseason game, which means they're going to try to win by any means necessary. Let me just say this, Mike.
I hold on to hope for that.
Let me tell you, I feel you on this. And yesterday, Kelly, you weren't here for guessing lines, but the four games I love, because we should really always do this on a Tuesday if you miss guessing lines, the four games I landed on, which is way more than I thought I would in a week 18. And I already bet these. I thought the Raiders was too short against the Broncos. Bet them at 2.5. I thought that the Bears I'll tell you what I got in my pocket if I took plus 3 or plus 3.5 now, which obviously makes a huge difference, but now I'm getting all confused. But I thought the Bears against the Packers, like, I think the Bears are really good, and I think I want to talk to Mike Sando about this a little later, about what the Bears are going to do with the Justin Fields story. But I got the Bears yesterday. Oh, the Bears one wasn't up. That was the one I didn't get. So I got the Raiders minus 2.5, the Dolphins plus 3 against the Bills. I couldn't believe that line, even with the Dolphins injuries. And then I took the Ravens plus 4. So the three I have in pocket, Raiders minus 2.5, Dolphins plus 3, Ravens plus 4, where I was betting didn't have the Bears lineup. I was hoping for a 3.5. But I think the Ravens, like, this is, again, what Drew was saying, you know, just because you're a must win doesn't mean you must cover. And I would just bring up the Dr. Bob line, which is, if you're in a must win situation, it means you must not be that good. And I have a feeling the Ravens come out, and even without their starters, playing for much of this. Get the job done against the Steelers. At least I took the points.
I think there's a good chance. Yeah. I think there's a good chance. And that preseason line, it's a way to look at it for sure. Well, I mean, people, all those guys.
Yeah, people immediately go to, well, they have one. They have to play for something they don't. So there's your answer. If it were that simple.
Right, yeah. We'd be all be cleaning up on
the team. That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk some college football after the just amazing National Invitational semifinals last night. Pete Futak joins us from collegefootballnews.com. Pedro, how you doing, man?
You're talking about the NFL Week 18. If you use the word opt-out, then you're basically talking this bowl season in a lot of ways for some of these teams. It's funny. I like your national little shot in there from the National Invitational. Your Florida State team lost in the worst bowl game. Worst bowl loss in the history of college football.
Really? Are we going to start with this? They had 100 guys out. Let's just stop.
The National Invitation.
It is the National Invitation semifinals. I've said it 100 times. I'll say it 100 more. It is that. It was great. Don't get me wrong. But the point of it is, and I use UW as an example, like the market completely underrates them week after week after week, gives them no respect in any big game, and they keep getting it done. The point is, Pete, you just have to settle this on the field because no one knows a damn thing. Don't you agree with that?
No, not at all. You kind of do if you see these teams throughout the – Look, I get what you're saying. I'm the ultimate one who keeps missing on Washington. Because if you watch, again, the thing about Washington is if you've seen them all year, there's parts to their game, and you saw it last night. They pitched a near perfect game and almost lost. Like, it's kind of hard to really, and this is where going forward, I'm going to do it again because I actually did, they missed everything on Washington. And I got everything right this year on Michigan. Washington's just one of those teams that, like, they're just good enough to always keep winning. And they kind of do stuff to make it too close. You know, like, they should have destroyed Stanford. They should have destroyed Arizona State. There are all these teams that they really struggled against that should have been 40-point blowouts, and they just weren't. So, like, even again, like last night's game, Pennix goes for 430. They can have total dominance over the game. Texas basically had one of its worst performances of the year. That was not, and we thought, like, it's almost like Michigan of last year against TCU. Texas, it was almost like the stage was too big for Texas in a weird way because they just did not play their game and they blew it at the end. They still almost pulled that thing out. So, I get it. I think Michigan, I think they roll. This Michigan team is just, it's the team of the year. They just are. That the national championship was played in Pasadena. I will be stunned if Michigan doesn't. And Michigan should have won that easier. They screwed up. That was not a team that did that all year. I will be stunned if Michigan doesn't win this relatively handily.
I saw you guessed that line at 7.5 yesterday. Am I correct in that?
Yeah.
So
I am stunned at 4. I am honestly, first of all, there's the Michigan bump. And if you guys know lines better than I do, even the entire Michigan nation, there's always that Saturday morning, last second half point Michigan. You know, the Michigan world all wakes up and in the morning and they all hammer their team because I'm going to watch my team today and they're all going to hammer it. I guarantee you, especially if Dylan Johnson really is banged up and can't go, that if you care, if you actually are in this and really think Michigan's going to win, jump at 4 because that is going to go up as soon as the Michigan fan base starts betting on this.
I took the approach yesterday with UW where I was like, you know, again, when Washington played Oregon, they were what, 9-10 point dogs. A lot of people didn't give them a chance. They said, oh, they're not nearly as good as Oregon. Yesterday, although the line didn't reflect it in the market, anecdotally here, everybody I heard was on Alabama. Everybody. They all were on Alabama. They knew the final score. in the first game against Michigan, and then in the game with UW, you know, again, they're 4.5-point dogs against Texas, and I took the approach, I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch Penix play against this defense for one drive, and it was so apparent so quickly. I was like, oh, he's unfazed. He is every bit as good as he's always been. I'm going to take the same approach with Michigan, and I ask you this very sincerely. You're really super confident on Michigan. What is it about Michigan that will be able to stifle him and this offense in a way that no one else has been able to?
That defense is the real deal. And I will say that, like, again, I thought, like, again, I mean, no one knows anything. I thought Iowa was going to Iowa yesterday and take Tennessee. Nope. You know, and I thought, why? Well, I told you, I think last week, I think Texas was my big thought. Like, I thought Texas, if it played like it did all year, should have rolled. Nope. Like you said, but I get Michigan. My actual on-site call was Michigan was going to win 27-23, and it was 27-12. They are ultra consistent. They had the screw ups with the fumbles, and they weren't quite right, but they just are the most methodical team I can remember. They're just unfazed. It's just the lines are great. I mean, this is there's no real weakness on this team except for last night. They couldn't seem to get their special teams right. But they don't commit penalties. They don't get flagged. That they are methodical in how they drive. Their play calling has been excellent. They're just razor sharp. And how they get to Penix and how they do this is they stop the running game for Washington, which also has to be a part of this to mix it up. Washington's not going to run at all. And I love the internet last night. Speaking of, no one knows everything. Everyone who was on Alabama was dogging Jalen Milroe and dogging the passing game against him. Alabama ran, nobody ran more than 40 times this year on Michigan. Alabama did. That was the best rushing performance by anybody last year or this year against Michigan. And it still didn't get the job done. So I think the one key this year has been that the Washington offensive line has been great. This offense is amazing at getting the ball out of Penix's hands. And I just think this becomes the part where it's like stuff becomes real. And my comp becomes 2014, where Oregon, that was the most confident team I'd ever seen when they beat Florida State in that Rose Bowl. They got to the national championship, and also it's like, wow, we're here. And it was like too big. I do not think this moment's too big for Michigan.
All right, you're very strong on it. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to wait to see Penix play a drive, and then I'm going to jump in. You might be right. We shall see. Last thing, Pete, 45 seconds. After that performance by Penix, after his performance all year, he was great at Indiana, too. Penix, yep. Caleb, we saw what's the kid's name, Miller Moss, perform well for USC in his first game. I don't know how great Caleb Williams is after seeing that. And then, of course, Jaden Daniels. Who would you, if you're a quarterback needy GM in the NFL, Pete Futak GM, who do you pick of those three?
Drake May. I mean, that's the, yeah. I'm a Chicago. I live in Chicago. My world are the Bears when it comes to the people I know. I don't care about the Bears. I don't know on this one because there's so many. How about if Shedeur Sanders comes out? Or how about keep going with all the different parts of this? I think Penix is great. I certainly think Drake May is great. I certainly think Bo Nix is great. I mean, keep on going. I'm a believer that out of all these, yes, you don't want to be the person that misses on Caleb Williams. But in this one, there's not another position guy who's that great. So if you're the Bears, I say you take the guy at the one and you see how you play it out in camp and then trade one of them from there.
Wow. And if I'm another team that needs a quarterback, I call the Bears and I said, give me Justin Fields now. Pete, thank you. Appreciate
exactly.
it, man.
There you go.
Pete Futak, everybody. FIUTAK, Pete Futak on Twitter, collegefootballnews.com. College basketball next with Jim Root.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $150 in bonus bets instantly, and they'll get the NBA League Pass for the rest of the season. Download the app and use the promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada here at the D downtown Las Vegas. I want to shout out Will Hill again. Will Hill has his podcast back. It's called Shoulda Bet More. which I love.
Love it. Yep, love it.
Love from Will. And he said, hey, Gil, I had Mike Sando on. I'm like, Sando? Oh, my God, that's such a great idea. We got to get him on. Mike and I met. Mike Sando, by the way, who writes for The Athletic. He's a Hall of Fame selector. He's a AP voter, who votes on all the NFL awards. I think we met back at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference years ago, if I'm guessing correctly. He joins us now, primarily from The Athletic. How you doing, Mike? At Sando NFL, by the way, on the Twitter machine. How you doing, man?
Hey, I am doing great. Coming off of a fantasy league championship in which my Travis Kelce went toe-to-toe with Christian McCaffrey in the final week. What a glorious finish it was.
Do you go around and do you say to your wife, what's it like being married to a fantasy football champion? Do you do that a bunch of that?
Well, it's funny. I've been in this league with friends for like 10 years, and I always do well. I'd never won the thing. You know, here I am covering a league.
Yeah.
And I'm like second, you know, fourth, third. And so I was nervous. Believe me, I was nervous this last week because I was at the way by far the best team. But you know how it is by the end of the year, you're suddenly missing three guys, you know, and so any given Sunday. But yeah, Kelce was the fourth overall pick for me. And I ended up having three other tight ends that were probably better this year.
Monkeys off your back, Mike. They can never take it away from you. Fantasy champ.
It's fun.
Okay, before we get to your awards thoughts, because you are an actual voter, one of 50 on all of these, I want to get a couple thoughts. One, we were just talking about Michael Penix last night for UW. Chicago has the number one pick in the NFL draft by way of the Bryce Young trade. I'm a Washington fan. They're either going to end up with two or three, assuming they lose here, to Dallas. They could very well be in need of a quarterback. What are the Bears? If you're reading the tea leaves right now, where do the Bears stand on Justin Fields? What are they going to do?
I think under normal circumstances, they would be, you know, fairly excited and probably, you know, signing up for more in the absence of having a better option, right? That would typically be where you would be at, but that's not where they're at. I mean, they have the number one pick in the draft, and there's quarterbacks that seem to be worthy of that. I don't see any way they can pass that up. If you were Ryan Poles, you know, you just don't get that many swings to get your quarterback, and he hasn't gotten his quarterback. He inherited Justin Fields. I think he was happy to inherit him. But how could you double down, right? I mean, I feel like right now, to stay in a gambling realm, you know, do you want to just accept the fact that you have, are you going to stand on 16, you know, and hope you get a 5 or a 4? That's kind of where you're at. I feel like the hand may not be that bad, but do you just want to settle for having a 17? Let's just say that.
Wow. Because right?
Or you have the chance of someone else who you think is two face cards coming up, and you get a chance to put your stamp on it. I don't know how you pass that up.
That is interesting. Because if I'm Washington, I'm like, I get on the phone the next minute. I'd be like, how do we get this guy from you? So it's interesting.
Well, yeah, it is. I just think you have to look at the whole body of work. I would not be getting overly excited about the last four games or whatever, right? Whatever it is, you can't do that. You have to look at the whole body of work and say, what is our opportunity? Now, if your evaluation of the guys coming out isn't good, then that's a different thing. But I think people feel like, you know, certainly with Caleb Williams, maybe with a couple others, that you have a real opportunity
Yeah,
it's going to be even go better. And Justin Fields will have value. It's nothing personal to him. I think they've been, you know, happy with the way he's worked at it. And there's definitely has been some improvement, too.
Going to be fascinating to see what happens there. That'll obviously start the draft off with that decision. Okay. The team that no one wants to play in the playoffs in the NFC and in the AFC are.
Yeah. So when I do this, I'm not counting the ones at the top. No one wants to play Baltimore, right? We're not going to do that. I would say in the AFC, it's Cleveland and Buffalo. I just think that Buffalo, you know, obviously is a really good team that has had some weird stuff happen, but they would be difficult. And then Cleveland, to me, you know, they won at Baltimore. They got a house money feel to them with a great defense. You know, I think those are two teams there. In the NFC, as you look a little bit further down, I think it's probably clearly the Rams, another team that, you know, has a really good quarterback, you know, has a good coach, has a decent defense, a really bad special teams that's probably going to do them in. That's why they lost at Baltimore. They gave a punt return touchdown. But I think that's a team that can run the ball, can throw the ball, and has some real energy, you know, with their young players.
okay, let us go to the awards. 1 week yeah. left in the season, obviously. We're not locking you into your vote here, Mike, but to the extent that you're willing to share, let's talk sure. MVP. Who would you vote for today?
It's super difficult. I'm not a literal MVP where you say it has to be the most valuable, has to be a quarterback. I'm not that. If we did that, when you have the best man in your wedding, you couldn't have your best friend. You'd have to find the best man in the whole world to stand there next to you. That's not what it is. Somebody can have a great season and not be the quote unquote most valuable because they were the quarterback. That being said, I don't really see that this year. I know Lamar Jackson's the big favorite, and maybe that's where it's at. Maybe it's who's hot on a great team over the last month, because there's really no one I'm comfortable with that has just carried their team every week offensively this season, right? So Brock Purdy, you could say, has the best stats, but we sort of know the context of that Jimmy Garoppolo had great stats too, or really good ones, and there's other factors there. Lamar is a huge part of an offense that isn't the reason why they win week to week, right? But he's been great here against really good teams. They have a 4-0 record against division leaders, winning by 25 points a game. He has 11 touchdowns, one interceptions in those. So I might lean that way with him, even though I'm fully aware, statistically, he hasn't really had that season.
And so your vote might be...
Oh, it might be Lamar right now. But,
okay.
But I would feel like if it is, it's... You know, I don't know that I can just defend it statistically, because I do believe they win the games on defense. But this stretch down, you know, these last couple games are a big deal. You know, and how he played the other day is a huge deal. So
yeah,
I don't really feel great about it. I think I'm going to have to think it through. I felt like Stafford was really on the rise, and then they barely won. You know, but I think Stafford's a really good one because. You know, of where their team was expected to be, the fact that when you combine their defense and special teams together, it's a bottom five unit, and it's really hard to win like that. And so, you know, I felt that, but after this last week, when Lamar goes 18 of 21 for 321 yards and 5 touchdowns, and they've had, in the context of this great team record, I mean, I think you have to take that into consideration too.
All right, let's do rapid fire. Coach of the year, your thoughts.
Oh, I might have to go with Kevin Stefanski at this point. You know, I was on John Harbaugh midseason, and he's still in it for me, because I think they, from where they were at a year ago with Lamar being unhappy and we're putting in a new offense, they've had tons of injuries. He would normally get it, but man, this Stefanski story with Cleveland, I'd probably lean towards him right now, just the way they've been able to, you know, have 4 quarterbacks start at least 2 games. Don't think that's ever happened.
It's amazing.
And beaten some really good teams. It's a really great story. So he's probably the leader for me.
Offensive rookie of the year. Is it CJ Stroud or Puka Nacua, who's 4 catches and 30 yards shy of breaking both rookie records for receptions and receiving yards?
It's probably Puka Nacua for me. I think that if CJ Stroud hadn't missed some time, I've leaned towards Puka Nacua after CJ Stroud was out, but we don't have to make a decision today.
No.
And I haven't fully sat down and just, you know, digested the whole thing. I'll study, I'll put in my work, but what Puka Nacua has done from day one, I mean, from day one, he's been a dominant receiver, for a team that's been winning. So, and wasn't expected to win. So I think he's had a great year, not just a Pro Bowl year, but maybe an All-Pro type year.
That put a little smile on my face right there. Okay, real quick, 2 more. Defensive rookie of the year. Who would you go with there?
Oh, that's a great question. I need to look at that one. Okay. I wish if I would have known you were going to ask me defensive rookie of the year, I need to look at it and study it.
That's fair. Okay, and then the one that a lot of people are so super confused about, comeback player of the year. Yeah. Are you a DeMar Hamlin guy or someone else?
I think so. You know, it is vaguely defined, right? There's not to me, just the fact that he made it back, I think even, you know, it's been a while since he made it back. So the story, we've had time to digest it, but just think about that. You know, if we were 10 years from now and we were looking backwards and we said, hey, there was a player who died on the field And if you remember the gravity of that situation, come back and play is truly amazing. So I think it's hard to beat that comeback story.
Can't argue with that. Mike, pleasure seeing you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mike Sando at Sando NFL, all his work at The Athletic, and a real-life voter, one of 50 for all these awards. Coming back with more NFL next.